Hannah and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbore and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. You have Jonna Spilbore, you have Carol Pesci, and this Frankenberry guy. Hi, ladies. How are we today?
Doing dandy, Frankenberry.
Oh, that is good to hear. That is good to hear. That was my almost computer voice, by the way. How are we, girls? How are we doing today?
is that your version of Siri, that mechanical?
Oh, is that
voice?
It? Yes. my AI voice. I actually heard our engineer guy, our IT guy, who, believe it or not, our IT guy's actual name initials are IT.
No, wait a minute.
I'm not kidding.
What's the I? Ira? What could be an I?
Isaiah.
Oh.
Yes. But okay. It still blows my mind that the IT guy's initials are IT. But I heard him in his little office not too long ago asking Siri, saying, Siri, tell me this. You know, I've never actually heard somebody. I never say Google, tell me something. If I hit the little microphone on my phone, I just hit the microphone on my phone and say, tell me, so, you know, what's the forecast going to be for today? I don't ask Google like it's a thing or a being. You know what I mean? Like it's a neighbor. Hey, yeah. Bill, how are the kids? What's the weather going to be like today? Mm-hmm. I don't do that with my phone. Hey, Google, how are all the little Googleites doing? Hope the wife is well. What's the weather going to be like today? I don't do that. But I heard somebody
tell you something
say
crazy.
Siri. Yeah.
I never use Siri.
You never use Siri?
Ever.
You're smart.
It's probably helpful.
I only ask the weather, and I ask for directions if I'm in the car. That's it.
She's not smart though, Frankenberry.
Well, it's good I don't use them or my Google lady. I don't.
See, Siri's not keeping up, and I'm an Apple person, so I should appreciate Siri, but I don't, because in case you guys have Carol, I know you have Amazon Alexa, right?
No.
You don't.
Nope. Craig got one. He won one at some kind of event, and it's in the garage. I don't want Alexa in my house. But if he's washing the car or doing something and he wants to put on some music, fine. But it's always listening, which is kind of dumb because our phones are listening anyway.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, my phone has like answered something for me sitting in my bag.
Yeah.
That's how frightening this stuff is, how invasive it seems to be,
But I guess so there goes my point, because I was going to tell you, Frankenberry, that if you had Alexa, so Alexa recently went through like a little upgrade. So they are intentionally trying now to sound more human. So, and it's really annoying, like which is probably why your IT guy is talking to it like it's a human, because they're trying to talk back to you like a human. So when I say in the morning, for example, I will set a timer on Alexa to play with the cats every morning, no matter what, I'll play with the cats, burn off their energy, whatever. So I'll say to Alexa, I'll go, Alexa, set a cat play timer for 5 minutes. And then, then Alexa, excuse me, will come back and go, okay, your cat play timer for 5 minutes is set. It's time to pounce. Like, I didn't
annotate that.
and that's Alexa. And that's Alexa. But
I can't believe you didn't toss that right into the Hudson River.
Exactly. Exactly.
I know. Time to pounce. But Siri doesn't do it. And here's why Siri annoys me, because the whole purpose for me of asking these devices to answer something for me is because I don't want to look at it. I don't have time to read it. So when I say to Siri, Siri, what time is it? And Siri just plops the time up on the screen. Well, if I could look at the screen, I wouldn't need to ask you.
Maybe that's why IT says, tell me this, because that's the precursor to say it. Say the answer.
All right. Yeah. Hang on a minute. Hey, Siri, tell me what time it is. No, she's still dumb. She just put it up on the screen.
And you know what? And that really frustrates me for the only thing really that I ever ask my phone is every now and then my phone will change. Somehow the settings change. This morning, what's the forecast going to be today? I get some Google Voice, it pops on, and it tells me what the forecast is going to be. Like out loud, speaks it to me. That's how I like it. I put my phone down, I hit the little microphone, I say, what's the forecast going to be? I go grab a shirt. I you know what I mean? I continue right. getting dressed. But sometimes it stops doing that, and it does what your phone just did, and it just pops up a forecast.
Right.
And that,
who's got time for that?
Well, who's got time to be that pissed off to start your day? Because
me.
That is incredibly annoying.
No, especially then.
But that's the whole point. Like, I know, I agree with you, Carol. They do listen. Our phones listen. It's really, you know, I can't even think about it because it would be really bad. But the whole reason I have them around is because I need to multitask and I can't be looking at anything when I'm multitasking.
And I have to tell you, by the way, when you mentioned that they try to make some of these voices now sound a little more conversational, sound a little more human, I have noticed that recently, somehow my name ended up on a list where I am getting phone calls by the dozens during the day. And they all come up with, you know, a caller ID that has some name like Martin Smith, you know, or IBM was popular for about 5 phone calls. Let's see, there was a hospital in Westchester that was popular for like 3. But one of the things they do, if you do actually answer the phone and they have changed something, you'll get an automated voice that's waiting for your response. So it's, you know, sound activated so it can continue with its spiel. But it's trying to sound even more human because now suddenly the voices will go, hello, hi, I'm Stephanie. Oh, hold on a second. My computer blanked out. Okay, I'm back now. And meanwhile, there is somebody listening on the other end of the line waiting for you to pick up.
Right.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
Yeah, that's the person that you can curse at.
Well, it's the whole AI thing. I mean, so far we've only scratched the surface with AI, and I do have a love-hate relationship with it. I think it's good for certain things and it's not good for other things. But I got to tell you, on my feed, social media feed, I have all of the advertisements I see, I think are AI generated. Yeah. But pretending not to be. Like, I've generated some AI graphics, and I want you to know, like, there's no mistaking, it's AI. Like, I do things in there that you know it's AI, so I'm not faking you out. But these ads that want to look like they're the real person, it annoys me because it's always like you are a wax museum figurine come to life. You can always tell that it's AI. And then it's like, well, if it's AI, why am I, like, what part did you have in it? Why am I listening to it? And it irks me. Like, I think that's the one piece of AI, either it needs to get so much better that you absolutely can't tell.
It will. Or which is scary. It's frustrating for me when I get on things in my feed. I'm like, and I question everything now. Is that real? Is that real?
I know. And most of the time it's not. And you can always tell by the hand gestures. It's always the same mechanical hand gestures. You know, the faces look a little like dead, like, you know, what you would look like if you went to a mortician and he's like, I know you're alive, but I'm going to just do your makeup as if you were dead. And then you film yourself. That's exactly what it looks like to me. And then it bothers me because I'm like, you're dead. You're waxy, but I know you're alive, but you're still waxy. You know, it's weird. And ChatGPT or whatever, you know, there's a whole bunch of them, but the whole AI stuff, like it does not do me very well at all. Like, I've uploaded a million pictures of myself and it spits out something that always looks like Lori Loughlin from what was
She's
that
beautiful.
Show? What was the, but what, no, but I'm not her. What was that show? No. House, Open House, Big House. What was that show that she was on?
Oh, Frank Bear, do you know who she is? What was it?
Yeah, it was.
The one with Bob Saget.
She did, yeah. What was that show called? Open House?
Full House.
Full House.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yes, she went to jail,
John Stamos, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Who was the one? Did Bob Saget die? He was the one who died.
Yes, he passed away, yeah.
And Lori Loughlin, either she went to jail, she got prosecuted.
She did go to jail. Yeah. I don't know for how long, but
But it always makes me look like that. And I'm like, ugh. Yeah. But it's way of the future.
You can't look any better than you look.
It is going
naturally.
Yes, the wave of the future that's going to be the downfall of mankind.
Yeah, I know.
Even when you have a chef hat on and glasses and your face is covered in flour, you still look beautiful.
Time to pounce. Oh,
do you ever change your voice? So I use Waze whenever I travel. Love it. And you can change your profile voice. I don't know if you guys ever play around with that. I did like a unicorn once to be all bubbly and make the mistake of started driving. And it was like that. I'm like, oh, I'm going to punch her soon. Like
that lasted like two left turns. That's it.
Oh, I know. I'm like, I either got to pull over or shut the volume off or something.
But you just reminded me, my Siri voice, I changed to an Australian man. And because I like that.
You did.
I like that accent, but my Siri voice isn't doing the Australian man anymore. So it like changed itself back to.
Maybe it didn't update and you lost that.
Oh, it probably did. But now I want to see what the unicorn voice sounds like.
That's on Waze. I don't know if it's on like might not the be other it. Ones.
But was it like childlike and bubbly or what was it?
Not childlike, but like tweeny, like bubbly, overly bubbly.
Yeah. Oh, like the
like a unicorn would sound if a unicorn was a human.
No, my unicorn
and pink.
If I were a unicorn, my unicorn would swear, would sound just a little bit drunk, like a 0.07.
I was just going to say your unicorn sitting at a
7.08.
Your unicorn sitting at a dive bar, telling the telling the whatever fantastical being is sitting next to him his life story.
Oh my gosh,
that's my unicorn.
Yeah, no, I gotta tell you, Bill. You know, she was a cool kid, but man, the second she turned 13, oh, she got into the teen years. That was it, Bill. I was done, man. Crap, I was toast.
What would a unicorn drink at a bar? That's a great book title.
That's easy. That's, you know what a unicorn would drink at a bar?
What?
A unicorn would drink your drink at a bar. And Carol's drink, in case anybody wants to know, if anybody ever sees her out, wants to buy her a drink, is she likes Cosmopolitan's light pink, right? Mm-hmm. Light pink.
And not too sweet.
Right.
And side note, you're probably the only one person to see me out at a bar. I think you and Jeannie are the only people I go out with.
That's true. But that's what a unicorn would drink, Carol's drink, because of the color.
Or something frozen with whipped cream on it.
Blech. Yeah,
but yes,
it's a unicorn sounding drink.
Got it.
That is a unicorn sounding drink. And oh, by the way, speaking of that, I have to tell you, I had to change my I had to change the way I order drinks lately, and I'm going to tell you why I did that. So you know, most places.
Oh, can't wait.
Most places these days, so my drink is a margarita. And when I go out to dinner and I order my margarita, this is how it comes out of my mouth. I'll say I'll name the brand of tequila, right? So let's say it's Herradura, right? I'll go Herradura tequila, Herradura margarita on the rocks with salt. So that's how my order goes. It's kind of like when you go to Starbucks and you're like, venti latte, half skin, blah, blah, blah. But I don't, you know, that's not what I do. Mine is Herradura margarita on the rocks with salt. Boom, ba, boom, ba, boom.
Which always throws the people at Starbucks off.
Yeah. Good one, Frank.
Good
and
one, Frank and Barry.
Sure does.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it does, especially at 6 a.m. But anyway, right. But I realized recently that for me to say, ba-ba-ba margarita on the rocks is not necessary. Why? Because no place that I go can you get a margarita frozen. Maybe if you go, like you used to maybe get one at one of my favorite Mexican restaurants that has since closed. But when I go to steakhouses or wherever I go, they're not blending up your margarita.
They don't have a blender or one of those things that has a lever that it pumps out of. Like a soft-serve drink.
Like at the fair, right.
So daiquiris don't happen anymore?
Well, frozen daiquiris don't happen. So I realize that it makes me sound stupid when I order a blank margarita on the rocks with salt because that's the only way that they're going to do it. So now I started ordering a margarita with salt. And every time it comes out of my mouth, I feel like it's like when you leave the house and you didn't put your watch on.
What did I forget?
Yes. And now I feel I have to get used to my new way of ordering. And it was very important for me to share that with you because I, as a margarita connoisseur.
Of course it was.
Right. I'm a margarita connoisseur and I didn't want to look like a novice ordering on the rocks when I'm at, you know, some place that wouldn't possibly blend it even if they could. So that's what it did. Growing up. I'm all grown up.
You're grown up, but you're not awakened.
Well, I'm glad that's been confirmed.
Oh,
there's Billboard. I was just trying to pass by that one, but yes, go ahead.
Perfect. I didn't even even plan to give you that one, and you got it anyway.
No, I just was like tuning in, just like, are they going to give me something here? So coming up after the break, we will be speaking with Michelle Garside. She's a writer and brand architect, and she's got a book. It's not out yet, but this topic is fascinating. Her book will be coming out next year. We'll have her back again. And it's called Not Awakened. And the premise is that the fundamental flaw of the self-help industry is that we're starting out trying to fix something that's wrong about us. And she comes at it and says, your life's going to be better. You're going to feel whole. You're going to feel more complete and more successful when you embrace everything, messy parts and all. I'm looking for, and she's a friend of Jeannie Kelly, so she's a friend of ours. So when we come back from the break, we will be speaking with Michelle Garside.
All right, that is who you have on the way next for segment number two. So for Jonas Spielberg, for Carol Pesci, and for this fella, we'll be right back. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back for our second segment. We have a fantastic guest with us today. And we know that before we even talk to her because she is friends with Jeannie Kelly. So it's kind of a given. So
it's baked in the cake.
Yeah, it is. And you know something about baking cakes, don't you? So we have with us Michelle Garside. She is a brand architect and writer who has spent nearly two decades helping thought leaders, clinicians, coaches, and industry experts build the kind of brand that opens doors to book deals, something she knows a little bit about, media opportunities, speaking stages, and movements with a following. Her debut book, Not Awakened, is premiering in February of next year. So we're a little early in this, but the topic is so intriguing to me. I was like, can you talk to us now? We'll have you back again next year. So we're going to get into that in just a minute. But Michelle, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored and I'm excited to chat.
Fantastic. So the first thing that I would love to talk about, so your book, Not Awakened, is kind of a bit of an anti-self-help.
It is.
If I understand it right, that the fundamental flaw of most self-help gurus is, here's what's broken about you that needs fixing. And I feel like you come at this from a bit of a refreshing angle about embracing our wholeness. So I want to talk about that concept, but I would love to know what's the backstory that helped you come to the point that you want to write this book.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Well, I will say, I'll start with the title of the book and where that came from. So a few years back, I quit everything, quit my corporate career in big pharma, sold my apartment, left a relationship, and went off to India, as you do. Following the Eat, Pray, Love momentum. And fell in love with India, and then years later went back to a place called the Oneness University, which was a large institute in South India where you go and you go through intense processing to be deemed awakened at the end of the month. And so I lived there. I every single day was doing prayer and was doing meditation. And at the time, I had already started my agency for those in the spiritual development space. So I was working with some of the top spiritual leaders in the world. And I went to this ashram institute and was sure, oh my gosh, I am going to be the most awakened in the room. Like, I have read all the books. I grew up on a spiritual retreat center. Like, oh my gosh, I am the one. You know, when I tell the story, I said, you know, I thought to myself, I'm free from thought. And I went and as I do, I got myself in with the monks and I was like, you know, I've branded Mount Madonna and the Open Center and all of these places. Do you want me to help you with your marketing? And so after prayer every day, I literally, this is years back, was teaching what hashtags were to the monks in the office. And so anyway, by the end of the 6 weeks, I was so ready to get my certificate of awakening. And as they called out our names, it was like a huge graduation, hundreds of people in the room. And I was one of the only ones in the entire room deemed not awake. And it was like the bubble of my spiritual ego popped wide open. My mother was with me because of course she was. And I remember she was holding my hand and she was whispering, "This is the worst moment of your life. This is the most, this is the, take this in, that you can get through anything if you can get through this." And you know, I remember even God. In that moment, and there was a lot of shame because people, oh my gosh, if you could imagine, people from all over the world are coming up and taking selfies. 1, 2, 3, awakened. And like, they would not take it with me anyway. But I remember even in that moment knowing, oh, this is important. Like, even though that this is painful and even though that this is humiliating and oh my gosh, this is important. And that really began this unraveling of who I thought that I was in the spirituality space. And at that time, I was leading huge mind, body, spirit, wellness sleepaway camps for adults all around the country, taking people on retreats. I read all the books. These authors were my clients, my friends. I grew up on a spiritual retreat center. And yet, I was still struggling with bulimia. I was still struggling with food addiction. And so I was out in the world living in the light and then coming home and eating in the dark. It truly began just this journey of like, what am I doing? And like, I'm claiming my worth and I'm claiming my power, but why am I still eating into the night like this? I'm claiming, you know, everything is possible and manifestation. But why am I hurting myself with food? What's underneath that? That's really where the book began, which was this beginning of this unraveling of all that I had been holding in the spirituality space. And listen, the self-help personal development space is helps so many people, and that
sure.
is true. But what I have seen, especially being so deep in the industry behind closed doors, and you know, there's still a lot of pain, and there's a lot of disruption, even in the teachers themselves. And I wanted to begin to kind of free all of us from needing.
Amen.
Needing to just have it, like hold it all together. I wanted to create this movement, starting with this book, where I wasn't on a stage looking down at people saying, you know, this is what you need to do, but more so in the audience looking around being like, okay, guys, maybe let's go this way together. Yeah. And so that's really how the book started. It started from being not awakened, and then all the years that followed, untangling what was underneath the spiritual bypassing of the self-help industry, which was shame. And so the book is really a call to eradicate shame in ourselves. And I start by telling the truth. So it's a lot of my close personal stories about food and about family dynamics and mental illness and motherhood and marriage, all of money, as a way to say, let me go first. Let me tell you my deepest, darkest, most disgusting things. And let me.
That takes so much courage, Michelle. It really does.
Well, listen, I really healed myself and was healed not through self-help books, but through 12-step recovery. I'm sober and I'm
congratulations.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful. I love being sober and so grateful to be an alcoholic and have had that journey in the rooms. But free from so many substances, but my real primary drug was food. And I really, you know, sitting in those 12-step meetings, it was called Overeaters Anonymous, where we all just went around and said the most disgusting things that we were doing with food. And instead of, you know, people looking away, people leaned in and said, oh, me too, laughed about it. It was like, oh, it just lifted it. No matter how bad it was, being in a circle of people, men and women, who said me too, and I get it, and oh my gosh, I've been there, or even more powerfully, I'm there right now. That is what begins to lift the shame, one secret at a time. And so that's really what I want this book to feel like for those who've never stepped in a church basement, which I know is many people, to be in rooms like that, to have that experience of, oh, I've done some crazy stuff too, you know, with money or whatever it is. And maybe I'm not so messed up. Maybe I'm not so alone.
Michelle, this is Jonna. I have to ask you, I'm trying to be funny on our Zoom by raising my hand.
Oh my gosh,
I see it.
Sorry.
But I do have to ask you something. So for the slow, can you define what is your definition of awakened? Because as I listen to your story, which, oh my God, you are wonderfully entertaining. And at the same time, obviously sharing something that was an incredible struggle and might still be for all we know. But what you sound pretty awakened, like the fact that you know that about yourself and can take that and help other people. To me, that's my definition of awakened. So what is the definition of awakened?
Oh, I love that that's your definition of awakened. A lot of people in the spirituality space and look at when they get to this level or this moment of living where nothing touches them anymore. They are fully the observer. Like, oh, wow, look at my thoughts of anger raise. That is not me. I see my thoughts of anger at my husband raise and I meet them. They don't just rise like little clouds in the sky. I fight with my husband. I overspend. I am human. So it's claiming, you know, maybe we're not in this lifetime supposed to be these ethereal beings that are living in bliss because we chose to have a human experience this time around. And so maybe, just maybe, all of the things that we're trying to bypass or heal or get over, that's all just part of the game this time around. And our job isn't to fix them, but to own them all.
Michelle, that's a huge statement right there. And I think that in itself, there are some people can pursue, not that I'm raising my hand, the self-help path of all these books. And sometimes the more I read, Michelle, the worse I feel about myself. Like, I'm intelligent. Like, what am I missing here? And to come at this and say to people, look, you're not broken. You're not supposed to go at war with yourself, because you then weaken yourself. Explore those parts of yourself that you think should be different or ashamed. And my question to this is going to be, so I believe this to be very, very true, that we are stronger when we embrace our wholeness, our messiness, all of that. And how do you speak to the person who says, okay, I hear you. I really dislike this aspect of myself and I want to change it. So how do I move forward towards change while embracing the part of me I don't like?
Oh yeah, change it. But without making yourself wrong to be wherever you are in that moment. So that's a big part of what I talk about, is like every single thing, all of the ups, all of the downs, all of the quote unquote wrong relationships, it's all perfect. Like every single thing that has, everything that's happening right now, even the shame itself, is perfect. Like, there's nothing wrong. If you want to change it, great. But change it with the knowing that, like, you're not, you didn't make a wrong turn, or you didn't do something wrong or bad. Like, it's, that's, I think, the biggest part. Sure, of course, make a change. Oh my gosh, I went on Zepbound and lost 70 pounds. Like, I am like the public speaker of Zepbound. But, and eradicating the shame in that also, in the 12 step community. But, no, make a change. Life, you know, but do it without hurting yourself, and do it without making yourself wrong or keeping it in the gutters. You know, you said something about embracing the messy human part of us. Not only is that exploring those parts helping free ourselves, but, you know, as I'm sure you talk about on here, we live in this epidemic of loneliness. We all feel so alone. And it's actually, I believe, those parts, the messiest parts, the darkest parts, the parts that you want to change and you haven't yet, those are actually the parts that actually connect us to the people that we're wanting to be in relationship with.
Really. Oh my God, Michelle, that's big right there. And we are in a time of society with social media only showing those best, most beautiful, positive experiences.
Yep.
That causes those things to go deeper and deeper. And you're right. When we are vulnerable, and you've done it within the first 2 minutes of this show, We felt connected to you immediately, not because you came up and said, I have this all figured out, listen to what I have to say. No, you came on and you were raw and you were true and you were vulnerable, and we immediately connected with you.
That's the only way. You know, I run a company, it's called the Connecticut Women's Club, and it's just dinners. It's just, we all meet for dinner every month. That's basically what it is. But it's open to women, and always I start with an opening of what's going on, of what heavy am I wanting to put in the middle of the room just for this dinner? What am I ready to just release just for this dinner? And every single time I see that openness, that sharing, that vulnerability, it opened the room. You know, I saw it in 12-step recovery. We start with a qualification, someone telling their story. I was in 12-step recovery for literally 25 years. And just time and time again, it's like the story opens and then boom, everyone's going around and sharing, like, just every time and time and time. And so now in any gathering that I'm doing, I always am like, well, let me start with what's going on. Let me start with how I feel, you know, about my kid right now, or how I feel about this mother's group, you know, like anything. And listen, I will say there are some people who are like, whoa, like they don't want to look at that yet. And so it might repel them a bit. And that's perfect too. You know, like even them just seeing someone speak that way, I think begins to open something up. I said something to a client yesterday. It's like the act of taking ice out of the freezer and putting it on the counter. You don't need to do anything more to the ice for the ice to melt. Just the act of it being out of the freezer.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Yeah. And like, that's what I feel. Even just like seeing someone be so viscerally honest. And we feel that in books, not a lot of self-help books, but in memoir, we feel that a lot. And I've had that experience of reading an Augustine Burroughs, you know, book and having that feeling of, oh my God, vulnerability and truth. And it changing how I operate in the world. And so that's, you know, my hope, my dream, my prayer is that this book and that all that I do, how I show up, not just in the book, but even, you know, at my 4-year-old's like Valentine's Day party at school, like that continues to open up and take ice out of the freezer for everyone I encounter.
I love that so much. Michelle, I have a question for you. So we're talking theory, and big picture. Someone's listening right now saying, maybe this is what I need. Maybe this is what I need. Where do I begin? Can you give me a practical first step for someone who might be resonating with what you're saying to begin to embrace the messiness to change your life?
Yeah. Tell someone. Ooh. Tell someone. That's always, I mean, the first step, in shedding shame you know, I believe the first step in being able to make a change is first shedding shame around it. Otherwise, you're just making a change on top of SHIT, right? So it's so shedding the shame around it. And for me, that always is telling someone. Sometimes I'm really loud and I tell thousands of people on my Facebook page of like, this is what happened and this is what I did. And so, you know, to get it out of me. But for others, you know, find someone in your community. Maybe it's someone that you see at your coffee shop. You know, we feel connected to people in, you know, people have this experience of like, oh, I like she feels like she could be nice, right? Like this, like feeling mm-hmm. about someone.
Yeah. That's their energy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I will literally go up to someone and be like, hi, I like felt you from across the airport. And like, I just want to say hi. I don't know why, but
that's
like,
awesome.
I always do that because I trust that completely. And yeah. So when you feel that maybe for someone just at the beginning of their journey, you don't go up to someone in the middle of LAX, but maybe you go to someone in your PTA meeting or you go to someone at your work or you, you know, maybe you always feel connected as you walk into the office with the secretary and ask to go to lunch and have a real conversation, not, oh, I'm fine. This is what the kids are doing. Oh my gosh. Like I can't even operate in a conversation like that. Like I'm like, I don't know what my kids are like. My kids are fine. But being able to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm having a hard time. And then you immediately open the door for the other person to be honest with you. And then it's a conversation for so many people that they're like, wow, I didn't even realize that we were going to talk about this. And that can happen every single day. That can happen every single conversation, really. But yeah, tell someone, go where it's warm. If that's not your partner or, you know, that's not someone already close in your life, a friend or mm-hmm. family member, feel that even if it's someone objective, sometimes that's someone that doesn't know you so well is the easiest way to do it.
Right.
And to feel that energy and to trust it.
You know what, Michelle, we should also talk to people on the other side of that. And what I mean is like, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, listen, be vulnerable, speak to somebody about it, open up. And because vulnerability is appealing and it's sticky, but it's also very hard. What about being the person who recognizes without somebody else having to tell you how vulnerable they are, that something is wrong and going up to them? And you being the first one, like, you know, the Sadie Hawkins of vulnerability and saying, hey, you know what? Is everything okay? You look a little bit off today. You want to talk? What do you want to talk about? I'm here. We can talk about anything. And pull it that way instead of waiting for somebody to share with you. Or is that?
No. How amazing. What a service. What a service you're doing in the world to do that. Like, yes, of course. You know, sometimes people could feel affronted, like, no, I'm fine. Why do I look not fine? like I've said that myself. Like, what? Do I not look happy?
Yeah.
She says angrily. But yeah, if you feel like the person you know, could be open to that, absolutely. What a service, what a gift you're giving them.
Well,
amazing. Michelle, so now I can't wait till February of next year until your book, Not Awakened, comes out. We're wrapping up here with Michelle Garside. I could talk to you all day. I love your energy. I love your honesty, your insight. If someone wants to benefit from what you have to say now, how did people connect with you, follow you, benefit from your amazing energy and insight?
Oh, well, always find me on social media. Friend me, be my friend. I am always looking for friends. You can go to notawakened.com and all my stuff lives there, like how you can work with me, but also my Substack where I'm starting to write some essays. The Not Awakened essay is out there on there. The Substack is called I'll Go First. And
I love it.
My website. Yeah. But yeah, notawakened.com and then everything. You can find me in all different ways from there.
You're amazing. I wish you all the best. Thank you for having the courage to share your true story and true self with the rest of us so that we may live better.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I love your energy, Michelle.
And why do we have to wait till February? Why do we have to wait till February for the book? Can we?
I mean, it's a little literally. Do you know who's holding the book right now? We're off.
Gabby
air, right?
Bernstein.
Oh well, Gabby. Oh. Gabby's a client of mine, so Gabby blurbed it. Literally, Gabby blurbed it. But when I first got the book deal, before I even read it, before I even wrote anything. But yeah, all the self-help people: Chris Carr, Gabby Bernstein, Jess Ortner. Those are all my clients and friends. So that's easy. But Monica Lewinsky has it right now. No. I know I'm being introduced to Mayim Bialik, who
has gone
through some of this stuff. Yeah. I met with James Frey yesterday. Like the book is taking on an energy that I don't think I expected. Like I literally
had
the conversation with my husband, like, all right, FYI, like if this book actually becomes whatever they're saying, like our sex life, it like we are I talk about it all in here, and he's like that's what I signed up for.
Awesome. You're great.
But yeah, I know it's exciting, but I write a lot on Facebook, and yeah, but as soon as it's edited, my editor says I can't send it to anyone else, but okay, as soon as it's edited, I'll give you guys a sneak peek.
That'd be great.
Awesome.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome. Thank you guys so much. This was awesome.
We loved it.
Okay. So that was awesome talking to Michelle Garside. And by the way, when I pronounce her name, to me, it comes out very French. It's not very French. It's Garside. Okay. So just, you will find her on Instagram and all the socials as Michelle Garside. And she was wonderful to talk to, but we are not done yet. We are coming back with segment number 3. So don't go away.
Jenna and Carol on K104. It's happy hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's happy hour with Jenna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time to happy hour here. Jenna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
That was my unicorn voice. That was my unicorn. My Waze unicorn voice.
I was just going to say, oh, fantastic. Again, your unicorn voice again sounds like it's sitting in a dive bar bemoaning its existence. Okay. Seriously, Jake, she turned 13. Done.
Oh,
I couldn't get her off my back fast enough.
That's it, man. I got to tell you. Holy cow.
If it's a bar a unicorn will sit at and drink, what kind of creature is the bartender?
Oh,
if it's a Martian. Martian with the big eyes.
No, if it's an animated film, it's either going to be like
something with opposable thumbs.
No, a water buffalo.
No,
doesn't have opposable thumbs.
No, too big. It's going to be a like a gopher, like from what was that? Caddyshack, like a gopher wearing a little bit of an apron around its fat belly.
Okay, all right. Or depending on the speed of the bar, it could be a sloth.
No. Nobody. Everybody would leave. They'd have nobody there. You can't wait that long for a margarita, not on the rocks.
All right. Anywho, so Michelle was great. Very, very refreshing angle. And I get it. I wrote about that concept in Hello Beautiful, that the best version of you is the whole one, the complete one. Embrace the messy parts. Take those things that we think are negative about ourselves and accept them. You go to war with yourself. And I think while there's many brilliant authors out there and self-help industry has many of the authors' best of intentions, it kind of takes the pressure off to say, stop trying to fix yourself, right?
Well, yes, it does. And I know you've written about that in your book, but I also think that people consume, as they do, everything in this industry because we want to change, mm-hmm. right? So I suppose, you know, and the message could be, it's okay to want to change, but you don't have to feel like you're broken and therefore you need to change. If you want something, you want something to be different, it's okay. Don't beat yourself up because of what you are right now, I guess.
Right. And I think that the point is from the place that you start from that place that you want to create change isn't from I'm broken.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But and it's also a fine line to walk, though, like, you know, what Jenna was saying there, too. You know, Carol, you had written about, you know, you need to embrace all the messy that is you, understand yourself to be able to move forward. But like Jenna said, some folks, you know, they turn to this industry and they say to themselves, I want something that is different from me. Right. You know, so instead, it's nice to maybe find something that kind of walks the line, straddles the fence a little bit. It says, all right, look, you can still keep parts of you, you know, that part over there. We like that part. We're going to keep that part. And then we're also going to give you the change that you think you need. And we're going to present you with a change that is going to help you to move forward. But hold on to that other part there while you're at it. So it kind of gives you a little bit of both to move forward with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to when her book comes out. She's pretty active on Instagram and has some pretty good posts with like snippets of what's coming and the reviews from, you know, she sent out early copies, obviously, to some pretty high level people, and the reviews are phenomenal. So we'll definitely have her join us again when the book is out.
Why does it have to take so long for books to come out?
It doesn't.
That's what I thought.
It doesn't if you work with me.
Yeah, you're talking to the publisher here, man.
Yeah.
I know. That's why I asked her. Perfect question to ask her. I don't get why it takes so long.
It's because of the person that's actually writing the book that needs to write one that's taking too long to get that actual part done.
Well, that is part of it.
Well,
I wonder what Frankenberry's talking about there. I'm not quite getting his point.
I'm ignoring it. I'm ignoring the point. But yeah, so she was great. And it's just one last thing I want to make, a point on this, because it kind of goes with, though, our guest from last week, who, remember, was talking about, look, your nervous system is affected when you want things that you don't have, or you want changes that you got to make. So that's another reason why we're compelled, even though we're embracing who we are, we're compelled to look for other things, because your nerves get shot when you're in places that you feel uncomfortable in.
And I think it is a very similar topic. So you embrace the wholeness of you, stop fighting against aspects of yourself, and move forward with change from a place of wholeness instead of being at war with yourself.
Right.
Big difference.
Right.
Another great guest referred to us, thanks to Jeannie Kelly.
Jeannie Kelly, one of our faves. So I guess. Right.
Always spot on with them, their recommendations.
I guess that's a wrap.
I think so. I think so. So for Jonas Spillmore and for Carol Pesci and myself, again, guy named Frankenberry, we will be back next week and we'll do the same thing again then. So come back.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spillmore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.